Ladies and gentlemen, in just a moment you are going to hear the voice of a man who will tell you some tremendously important facts.
On this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Because everybody needs to have that feeling that, okay, I'm going to die. It's done. My life is over. We're always in the moment. And so if we take that as a fact, it gives us new ideas on how we can manipulate our future and past as well.
That's what we've been led to believe, that the ultimate best solution is the one that you work the hardest for, when in fact the best solution might be the easy solution.
When you learn that you can create your own anchors, that is one of the keys to changing your reality. For instance,
health, performance, nutrition, longevity, ancestral living, biohacking, and much more. My name is Ben Greenfield. Welcome to the show.
Today's episode is with the great Brian Scott, author of the book, The Reality Revolution, which I really, really enjoyed more than I thought I was going to, honestly. And we have a really great chat today. We don't talk much about like fitness and supplements and nutrition. No, we talk about mindset and reprogramming your subconscious and visualization and time-space continuums and quantum physics. And woo, it's a good one. All right, folks, this is it. This is the magical moment. My brand new, pretty unique, kind of weird cookbook is ready. Why do I say weird? Because it's just chock full of all these crazy and unique mashups of molecular gastronomy and biohacking and superfoods, along with recipes from my wife, from my kids. It's an epic bounty of mouthwatering, taste bud entertaining goodness. And I think the luscious photos spread throughout are pretty darn cool as well. It's a beautiful cookbook. It's big. It's beautiful. It's chock full of all the crazy, unique recipes you hear me talking about making, you know, on Instagram and podcasts and articles. Now it's all done for you. It's all spelled out. You can eat the way I do from the comfort of your own home using the same type of foods that I eat. So here's the deal. In the final weeks leading up to the cookbook launch, I'm running some pretty darn cool promos. So I have a few partners who I've partnered up with, who are going to be giving away a ton of extra goodies, like $4,000 worth of extra goodies, if you pre-order the cookbook before, drumroll please, June 14th. Okay, so if you just go to boundlesscookbook.com and you order the cookbook before June 14th, and pre-orders are live now, then you get automatically registered to win free gifts from Traeger, their Ironwood 885 grill, that giant smoker grill, same one I use. Yeah, you can get free one of those on your porch or your kitchen or your bedroom, wherever you want to keep your grill. Organifi is giving away a ton of their red, green, and gold powder. Dry Farm Wines, a 12-bottle case of their natural, organic, biodynamic wine. Keon is hooking you up with 3 bags of organic coffee, 2 boxes of clean energy bars, and a bottle of the amazing colostrum that they have. Kettle and Fire is giving you 24 cartons of their organic packaged bone broth, and Four Sigmatic is stepping up and giving you a huge pack of their medicinal shroomies. So we're going to announce the winners on June 14th, which means you got to get your cookbook by June 14th. That's coming up quick. Boundlesscookbook.com. Go grab your copy today. This podcast is brought to you by Keon Lean. You pop a couple of these before carbohydrates, before alcohol, before any big heavy meal that might spike your blood glucose. Supports healthy blood glucose management, assists in weight management, supports metabolic wellness. We're talking about all natural ingredients like astragalus, not a ginseng, wild bitter melon. I always have this stuff on me for dinner, for nights out, for a cocktail party. Lean just does the trick, and it doesn't give you jitters, you know, like a lot of these weight loss supplements. Clinically backed glucose metabolism support, 100% plant-based ingredients. It's Keon Lean. You go to getkeon.com/Ben Greenfield. That's going to get you 20% off of this or any of the fine products at Keon, like our organic coffee and our tasty energy bar, any of that stuff. This podcast is also brought to you by Organ Meats. We know they're very good for us, but some people don't like the way they taste. But what if in a universe, you could actually get all of the benefits of organ meats, liver, kidney, and heart, all blended together, right? So you don't have to go hunt down a liver and a kidney and a heart, all grass fed, all grass finished, amazing, efficient way to get vitamin A, B12, B vitamins, CoQ10, iron. It's amazing for skin issues, for copper zinc ratios, for all of the hormonal issues a lot of people deal with, adrenal fatigue. Like, liver just is like a Band-Aid, not really a Band-Aid, like a, what do you call it, a silver bullet for a whole bunch of issues. And you feel amazing. Like consider, like, one cup of coffee can impair iron absorption by 60%. But you can replenish a lot of that with bioavailable iron from something like organ meats. You can sprinkle them on food. You can put them on dog food for your pet. Pets love organ meats. Paleo Valley has made this organ meat complex. And again, it's liver, kidney, and heart, all conveniently encapsulated and shipped straight to your front door. You are going to get a discount if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/paleovalley and use code BenGreenfield10. So BenGreenfieldFitness.com/PaleoValley and use code BenGreenfield10. All right, let's do this. I think I've mentioned it a few times before on the podcast. If you're listening to this podcast at the time it comes out and even listen to a few of the ones that came before it, that I read a book recently that was pretty darn good. It was called The Reality Revolution, The Mind-Blowing Movement to Hack Your Reality. And as a guy who doesn't read a lot of self-improvement books and thinks a lot of kind of the subconscious reprogramming stuff gets a little woo, I was a little bit hesitant to dive in. But I read the book and it was actually really good. It like mashed up in one book a ton of energy flow and body enhancement routines and subconscious reprogramming and meditation and visualization, if I can say that word, visualization tactics, just a ton of stuff. And this really practical and easy to understand way, written and explained by someone who's obviously done this stuff and I actually practice it and figured out different ways to do it correctly. His name is Brian Scott. He's my guest on today's podcast. He's an author, he's a speaker, he's a thought leader, he's a life coach. He's a podcast host for another podcast called the Reality Revolution Podcast, and he's an artist as well. He's got a pretty cool story because he almost got shot to death. I'll let you fill folks in on how that happened, Brian, but kind of as part of that, really developed a series of pretty cool techniques that are capable of creating profound transformation. And I mean, he teaches like how to lucid dream and how to surf through parallel realities and how to unlock the power of your mind through some, you know, new science-backed stuff, but also ancient tactics like, you know, Qigong and quantum jumping and reality transurfing. So strap on your seatbelts, and we're going to jump in with Brian. Brian, welcome to the show, man.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Ben. It's an honor to meet you.
Yeah, you too as well. And by the way, for those of you listening in, I'll link to everything Brian and I talk about at bengreenfieldfitness.com/realityrevolution. Before we start recording, Brian, I was telling you how I really dug the almost like the morning energy and body optimization and chakra and meridian flow routine that you outline in the book. And I think we'll probably get into that at some point in this podcast. We can describe it to folks, but I've been doing that a few times a week. Like sometimes I'll alternate, like some mornings I jump up and down on a trampoline and watch the sun rise. And then other mornings I'll, you know, go on a walk in the sunshine, but typically a few times a week. And especially when I travel, I've been using that routine and it feels like it just really aligns my energy when I travel. So so I owe a debt of gratitude to you for optimizing my little daily routine even more.
Wow. Coming from you, I'm honored because you have a lot of great content for exercise routines and health stuff. So coming from you, that means a lot. Thanks.
Yeah, well, I actually dug that section of the book. That's what kind of pulled me into the book, actually. Sometimes I start in the middle of a book and I started reading that section. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is really cool. I haven't tried half these moves. And I did, and I felt amazing. It was actually during a Mexico trip. I was reading your book. So I was up on the rooftop of our Airbnb, you know, doing my Zen swings and my chest thumps and my low back fists and my Tibetan rites. And it came back. Well, I taught it to my boys, first of all. I brought them up on the rooftop with me at like 5:30 a.m. and watched the sunrise with them and tried your routines. And it kind of stuck with me ever since. So anyways, we can get into those later. But okay, let's start here. From what I understand in your book, like Brian Scott isn't even your actual name, is it?
No, Well, if I went by my other name, people will always just misspell it. It's my middle name, Brian Scott. So when I decided to write my book, I chose to keep my last name. My last name is Binkson. And so, you know, three consonants. So, and I just found that people remembered Brian Scott. And at least at a minimum, you know, you get some BS when you check out my stuff, right? So,
that's funny.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. People identify and remember that name a little bit easier. So I just went with my middle name.
Well, being a guy like you are, who's kind of like really, you seem really tapped into your energy and just kind of your own vibration. When you change your name, do you feel like it changes your personality at all, or the way you think about yourself, or anything like that?
Huge game changer. I talk a lot in that book about identity shifting and quantum jumping, and to actually change my name changed my identity. It gave me, Brian Scott became someone different. I didn't have all the past wrapped up in Brian Binkson anymore, even though I'm the same person. It gave me an instrument, a way for me to redefine myself in a different way just by changing my name. And I recommend anybody else out there that wants to go through a transformation and shift, just change your name. Go out and become someone else and define who that new person is. And it was a great first step. It became a lot more powerful than I expected. Because when I say I am Brian Scott, even though I've always been Brian Scott Binkson, right? It just became a lot more powerful when I said that, because it was this new version of me that I could create.
Interesting. Did you have to legally do anything to change your name, or you just
no?
That's where you start writing,
right?
Yeah,
I didn't legally do anything. Yeah,
yeah.
I still sign my paintings when I do art. I sign Brian Binkson, but Brian Scott's just way easier to remember, is basically the only reason.
When I started writing fiction, I almost changed my name because my middle name is Grant. And I thought about changing my name to Grant Greenfield because I thought it sounded really good as a pen name. I never wound up doing it, but
not bad.
But I think that sounds pretty good, Grant Greenfield. I don't know, if crap hits the fan and I got to go into hiding and change my name, that'll be it.
Right. It also removed my ego from it. Like, if it was Brian, if my regular name, I feel more attached to it. Like, I'm more nervous. But when I'm going on as Brian Scott, that's someone else. It's like, it doesn't matter. I'm not as concerned about it personally, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. Okay, so speaking of crap hitting the fan, like, you almost got shot. Like, that's early in your book, and it sounds like that's what really kind of changed your life. So tell me about what happened. I think folks would really like that story.
Well, I'm a big Bronco fan. So this happened...
Like Denver Broncos?
Denver Broncos.
Okay.
So this happened when the Broncos were in the Super Bowl. And so when your team wins the Super Bowl, you kind of lose at, you know, you're so focused on the TV and you want to watch all the highlights. And so my Broncos won the Super Bowl. And so I'm sitting on the couch just watching ESPN, just want to catch all the stuff before it was gone. So I had a house where people had jumped through a park to the back and had went in through one of the doors, which was my bedroom. There was two doors in the back. One went to my bedroom, one went to the living room. And I kind of woke up because I was laying on the couch and I looked up and my back door was open, and I have cats. So I was like, oh no, my cats are going to get out. I was so into this. I thought I had done that. I thought I'd left the door open. So I kind of get up looking down for my cat, and I look up and there's this kid with a hoodie on, just pointing a gun at me right there. And so in that instant, this kind of voice, I felt like every time slow way down, and I didn't have fear overcome me. Maybe it was because of stuff I'd done in the past or something was helping me, but I shut this porch door and I turned and started to run, and I hear the gunshot. He had a .22. So it wasn't like in the movie. It was like kind of a pop, like those old, shooter guns when we were kids, you know, pop. And then the glass starts to break, and I hear the glass slowly breaking. And I can, and I'm running, and I,
you heard it in slow time like that?
I heard it in slow time. I still think about it all the time. The sound of the glass breaking, because it was double pane glass. So you can hear the first, and then you hear the second one. It felt like centuries later. And I'm running.
Cow.
And I feel this something hit my back, and I run to the other room, and there's someone else there. And they start shooting at me.
You mean like a second home invader?
A second home invader.
Oh,
so
I missed that part in your book. I thought there was just one guy. Oh wow.
So what happened is these kids had done this all over this neighborhood, and they looked in and thought I was gone because I was laying on my couch. They looked in the bed, and it's like 3 in the morning, and they, oh, he's not here. So they went in not knowing I was there, I probably surprised them. They probably were, you know, hoping that I wasn't there. And so then this person's in my other room, starts shooting at me. And I'm looking at the bullets like I'm in the Matrix, hitting the wall. I feel the wall coming at me. And I turn. Fortunately, I had my phone in my pocket. And I run to the garage and I call the police. And they ran away. And so come to find out, the first shot had bounced off my back. Now, it probably slowed down to 22. It went through two panes of glass. So by the time it gets to me, it's just like somebody had thrown a rock. But in my mind, you know, a 22, if it had shot me, it's not going to go right through. It's actually going to even be worse than a normal gun. So I got super lucky. And it just, wow. I had this little bump on my back. And in that moment, it felt like I could see all the different options available to me. Like I was being guided. And even afterwards, I felt like maybe if I go back in time and I help myself out, maybe the presence that was there that was protecting me was me. So I would go and a couple times I would meditate and try to talk to myself. Okay, you need to shut the door. You need to run. And so I felt, you know, later on, I felt like maybe I was communicating with myself through time. But afterwards, there's this moment that I kind of wish, I talked to Anita Morjani recently, who had a near-death experience. I wish I could just put it in a pill and just give it to everybody. Because everybody needs to have that feeling that, okay, I'm going to die. It's done. My life is over. There's a realization that comes over and you realize what's important. And then, so, you know, the day afterwards, I realized, you know, I have not really lived my life. It wasn't really about what had happened. It was about this idea that I had come to, that my life's been wasted. What can I do to make a difference? Can I look back if this ever happens again? And can I be proud of the life that I've lived? Can I leave something for my kids?
Common reaction to an NDE, right?
Right.
Just that whole reanalysis of life.
If I could just give that as a pill to everyone, because you don't need to have a near-death experience to have that this realization. It changed my life. It changed everything I did. From that moment on, everything was more important. I was more motivated, and I had moved outside of myself, and I was starting to really think, how can I help other people? How can I leave my mark? Because every breath at that point was a gift. You know, when I wake up in the morning, I shouldn't be here. You know, it's all good from now on. I made it. I made it to this point. I should be dead. And so I say that all the time. And so it gives me huge gratitude. It became a superpower for me. It motivated me to write that book, to do my channel, to do these meditations. If that had not happened, I'd been more worried about my own business and myself, and not kind of like moved outside of myself to really try to be of service to other people.
Well, you go on in the book and you talk about so many things, but kind of related, you seeing the bullets flying by you like something out of the Matrix, and seeing the glass shattering. I've had an experience like that before. It was a little bit more of a plant medicine induced type of experience. I believe in that case, it was kind of like DMT-ish, but yeah, everything was slow-mo and it felt like time did not exist. And I could literally see individual sound particles like waves and, you know, incredible experience. But you say in your book that one of the mistakes that we make when we think about time is to assume that it is linear. Now, how would you define linear time, and what, in your opinion, would be a better way to think about time?
Well, we imagine time like a line, linear meaning line. So you A equals B equals C equals D, and it just keeps on going, this cause and effect cycle. When in actuality, when we look at time on a quantum level, it's more like a lake or even an ocean. So when a pebble drops into the ocean, it circles out. And so the effects from any action that we take go backwards and forwards. And so oftentimes what we're sensing when people have intuitions about, they're sensing a wave from the future coming backwards. And we also sense waves coming forward. It's more of a circle than a straight line. So don't take my word for it. Just understand that if you look at the way that cause and effect can happen in a quantum field, the model that we have in our minds, which is how we experience everything, is in a linear fashion, is not actually what's happening. And we may be affecting our past and futures. We're always in the moment. And so if we take that as a fact, it gives us new ideas on how we can manipulate our future and past as well. It's something I first got the idea from Frederick Dodson, and then started to find references to it from different physicists.
What's his name? Frederick Dodson?
Frederick Dodson.
Yeah, I think I've come across that like pond ripple analogy before in a couple of quantum physics books. And mm-hmm. and it is very interesting, just this idea that, you know, I mean, like, you know, in the Bible, for example, it says that God knows neither time nor space. And I kind of think that yeah. in many cases, we paint ourselves into a corner when we assume, mm-hmm. like, for example, for me, that if I pray for a situation, let's say I'm praying, and a lot of times I'll pray for a situation that is going to occur in the future or something that I might be experiencing right now. But, right. but you know, until I really started to wrap my head around how time may not actually be linear and how almost like the butterfly effect, you know, when you talk about, you know, my kids will have this discussion at the dinner table, like what would happen if you went back in a time machine and whatever, like you, let's just throw some out there, like you killed Hitler or something like that. And that sounds like it would be a really good idea, but who knows how that would have changed, you know, a million different things on down the line. But it's that same kind of idea, like, couldn't you pray for something in the past that had already occurred to have occurred in a different way? And that's kind of a mind-blowing concept to a lot of people, or at least an illogical concept, because it irrationally kind of defies the concept of time being linear. But it's actually a very interesting way to approach life, thinking of time as being more like a pond ripple type of effect.
Well, it's also very powerful that, you know, Dodson mentions it in his book, and another classic mystic, Neville Goddard. And there's a technique that you can use to test this out. It's called revision. So say you had something terrible happen a few months ago. Imagine that we're experiencing reality in basically vibrational timeline. So right now you're experiencing a reality that is a result of all the things in your past in your mind, but all these other realities exist. So you can slip on over to another timeline that's similar in vibration to something as if it something else had happened, even though you still have the memories of everything that happened before. So, for instance, there's a story Neville Goddard gives of a woman that damaged her eyesight badly in a car accident. And so she imagined, and he says it's biblical, that this is something that in the Bible that is implied. So you go back and imagine that you didn't have the car accident, that you drove around the car accident where it happened. So she does this, and then her vision starts to improve mm-hmm. because she's living in a different reality where her vision is improved. And over time, a bridge of incidents sort of pulls her into this new reality where her vision is back to 20/20, even though she had this accident. So start applying this, and you'll start to see effects. It's the way to test this idea. So you have a big disagreement with your wife, which is very common. Everybody had a huge disagreement, right? You go to bed, you wake up, you're still angry. Go to bed and imagine that you didn't have the act. So part of what happens is your reaction to this situation changes. But also, you'll find, hey, she's acting like there's no argument anymore. And everything is happening around me as if we didn't have this big argument. Start applying it to little things. You'll start to see differences when you do that. That's the reason I talk about that in the book, because it's fun to talk about in theory, but you can actually use it to apply the way you think about consciousness.
Well, that kind of reminds me of something I learned from Dr. Don Woods, who has also been on the podcast before. And mm-hmm. and it's kind of a different way to approach the idea, meaning that maybe by reframing and going back and living something over again or seeing it in a different light, you're not actually time traveling and right. changing it as much as you are reprogramming a subconscious that is spinning and remembering that particular unpleasant scenario or traumatic scenario. Mm-hmm. And by reprogramming it, by playing it like a movie in your mind, and sometimes even playing it like a movie in your mind and watching you in the movie theater, watching that scene occur, processing it, almost being able to look at it objectively. And then what Don taught, and I don't know if you've ever tried this, was creating an anchor by thinking back to a time when you were more positive, when you were empowered, when you were having a very beneficial, non-traumatic experience, and then laying that same anchor down on top of the negative experience to kind of pull yourself out of that subconscious loop that might be keeping you mentally distracted or physically, even like a cell danger response type of scenario where your sympathetic nervous system is always jacked up. But it's all almost like going back and reliving the experience. So in a way, it's kind of sorta like time travel, because you're literally going back to whatever occurred, reprogramming the way that you responded to what occurred, and thus changing the way that your body is responding biologically to what had occurred due to your subconscious still kind of processing that in a negative way. Does that make sense?
It makes absolutely exactly what it's going on. 99% of it is in the mind. And so it's your reactions. It's the way that your sympathetic, automatic, all those different parts of your nervous system are immediately reacting, because you've created this new memory. I believe, from what we understand about reality transurfing, the other 1% is that you are moving into an energy field that is consistent with this other timeline where you didn't do those things. And so naturally this energy field also responds in a way. So there's a little, that my 1% is just theoretical. It's that we're also actually moving into another vibrational timeline as we understand the reality transurfing model, where we're moving into an energy field where that is, it's like time travel, but not going into the past, but moving into another period of time in this present that is the same as if that other didn't happen. Even though the memories are there, the energy is different.
Yeah, yeah, it makes perfect sense. But I mean, even in the book, you do get into the idea that maybe it does go beyond that. Because I think mm-hmm. you talk about Dobbs. What's his name? Is it Alan or Adrian Dobbs? Like a mathematician and physicist at Cambridge, right, back in the 60s, who also, yes, used that body of water as a metaphor.
He used the ripple metaphor. Time. And he's saying, we're sensing the ripples from the future, just like if somebody put a little boat on the water and it kind of floated up to us, or the leaves come up. We know something's coming. We can sense it. And some people become attuned to those waves,
yeah,
that are coming from the future. And then it tells us where to maneuver in this body of water, which is kind of what we're doing, this field of energy that's becoming manifest all around us all the time. We don't think about it, but it's kind of like a water. It moves in a fluidic way. There's waves of energy coming, waves of energy going, and we're moving, we're kind of dancing in this quantum fabric that's very much like water.
Yeah, like I think in your book you talk about like the people who didn't get on the planes on 9/11, or who didn't walk into a building that caught on fire, who didn't get into a, you know, train that went off the tracks. And, you know, sometimes I've thought that that's just intuition, which you also get into in the book, or like following your gut or following your heart, but maybe following your gut or following your heart or intuition actually is in a way tied to that ripple effect. Do you think it is?
I do. I think what's happening is that there's a portion of us that is aware of all these different possible realities. And if you're in tune enough, you'll sense it. You start getting, you know, want to get on the plane during 9/11, then there's some little voice that says, don't get on. They talk about it in transurfing, and it the plane could still arrive, but there are a number of realities where when you get on a red plane in the state of Washington, that there's an accident. So if you listen to that voice, and it's really interesting statistically that train accidents or plane accidents have fewer people that get on. Almost in every case, there's less people. There are a number of people that probably don't ever talk about it, that choose not to get on it. They become aware of it. It is a statistically significant number. That why is it less people are on the train when there's a train accident? Why is that? There's something else going on. People are aware, and I believe that's what's happening. At least the way I can conceptualize it is that a portion of our inner knowing is aware of these bubbles of the waves coming in that are of different events in the future. And so people get tuned into it. They can avoid car accidents. I've had a number of episodes I've read from multiple authors that, you know, for instance, have avoided, hey, they want to get in the cab. A little voice tells them, don't get on the cab, that the cab has an accident down the street. It's not just one. There's hundreds of stories. And I think that's kind of what's going on, is that we're sensing different variable possibilities in the future. And when we tune into that, we can avoid crazy things from happening.
I'm sure there's some scientific rationalists out there who's saying, well, the reason the train crashed is because there were fewer people on it, so it changed the weight of the train, thus it was moving differently. But
there's always going
to
be.
Yeah, that, right? I didn't think that that's actually not the case. So you actually talk a lot more about the idea of intuition and following your gut in the book, which is really good. But there's some other things that I want to get into as well. And maybe it is a little bit related to being the lucky person who, say, doesn't get on the train. But you actually say in the book that studies have demonstrated that lucky people are really just relaxed people. And that actually kind of reminded me of a recent study that I read that basically says that pursuing happiness, it can kind of make you unhappy. And it's kind of this paradoxical type of effect. That article is actually called The Paradox of Pursuing Happiness. It was in the Behavioral Sciences Journal. And it's almost like when you're grasping at things too hard, you actually don't really get them and create a paradox of not actually getting them despite how hard you try. But when you say studies have demonstrated that lucky people are really just relaxed people, what exactly do you mean by that?
Here's a good way to explain it, just to give a story. So they identify what all the rational components of a lucky person is. They have a way of studying it. They can identify and separate. These are lucky people. These are the unlucky people. So when they did the study, they did things like, we're going to invite the unlucky person to the coffee shop. And we're going to lay out a $100 bill on the street. The unlucky person is not going to see it. They're going to be so focused on getting into the coffee shop. But the lucky person is going to be aware and more relaxed. Oh, notices the $100 on the street because their awareness is open. They're not as singular focused. It's maybe not necessarily relaxation, but an awareness of looking out. When you're lucky, you're and that may be related to relaxation, but when you're lucky, it's a mindset that there's possibilities all around you. For instance, the same luck researchers used a newspaper, and they gave a newspaper, and they said, you know, it was something like, how many times do you see the word Joseph in this newspaper? Whoever gets it first, you know, so people are reading all the articles looking for the word Joseph, when on the first page in big bold writing, it says Joseph is used 10 times in this newspaper, right? So people don't see the big picture. They don't see because they become so narrowly focused, fine-tuned, and they're not expecting or looking. And so the lucky person is open and looking for and expects luck to be around the corner, looks for the $100 on the street. And the unlucky person is nervous, and they're looking around. They're not as aware of their surroundings and open to the possibility of luck in their life. If that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. Like if you go to a party and you want to say, like, I don't know, find the perfect partner, you're really intent on that, you're focused on that, you might miss the opportunity to actually make good friends. Or like you mentioned, you might look through the newspaper and you're really looking for an advertisement, let's say, for you to be a customer service manager, and that's all you're looking for, and you're super focused on that, you're a little bit less relaxed and open, and so you might miss other ads that show different types of jobs that might actually be the perfect job for you. So they're not focused on a single task. The lucky people aren't, and so therefore they're not blocking out everything else that they might miss, you know, something important or something unexpected or something even like serendipitous. And so it's this idea of going through life with a little bit more relaxed and open mentality. Kind of reminds me also of Greg McKeown's new book, Effortless, where, you know, sometimes we're looking almost like subconsciously, you know, with a near puritanical work ethic for the things or the ways to solve a problem that produce blood, sweat, and tears, because that's what we've been led to believe, that the ultimate best solution is the one that you work the hardest for, when in fact the best solution might be the easy solution, the so-called effortless solution, the one that we might do when we're in flow.
And I don't know if I talk about that in the book, but that's what I've found. The most successful option is generally the easiest. You're given options that come to you all the time. And if the harder option is always available to you, but if there's something that, and it's really hard mindset to break. A lot of people expect everything's going to be hard to do this. And when they find success and it's easy, there's a part of them that questions it, that undermines it, because, hey, this came too easy. This can't be a regular thing. It's like a disease, a virus that's taken over everywhere. I meet so many people that just so easily could become successful, but they want to make it hard. There's some part of them that has been trained that I can't have this success without working really, really hard. And it's just not true. It's a part of the mindset. And if I have things that come up, one of my calculus to decide, you know, what's the better option here is the one that's easiest. Maybe there's an inner laziness that I have, but that one always ends up being the easiest solution or the easiest idea. And I use that as a filter, and it generally is accurate in many cases, because there's something else that I keep on mentioning. Reality Transurfing, another great book by Vadim Zeland. It was originally written in Russian, so it has kind of bizarre translations. But the idea in the alternative space, in the space of flow, meaning that the way the different possibilities that are available to you when you wake up, there's a field of different opportunities that you have, millions of different things that you can do for the day. And if you've made your intention, there's sort of a flow that's the easiest flow, the alternatives flow that takes you there. A lot of times you can be swimming upstream, right? And you might be able to get to your destination, but you're going to be battling the current. And there's always an option that's the easiest one that will just take you there. And the more and more I start to apply this, I think it's true. I find that energetically, there's a stream that's going to take me there. I just got to find it, hop on, and ride the ride.
Well, hello. I want to interrupt today's show to tell you about Water and Wellness. They make active H2 molecular hydrogen and their other variation of hydrogen that has chromium added to it for metabolic control. You know, I was just telling you about Keon Lean. You stack this stuff with Keon Lean. Holy cow. It's hydrogen-rich water that has chromium added to it to reduce blood sugar, cholesterol levels, improve body fat percentage, improve insulin sensitivity, improve lean body mass. The list of benefits of hydrogen-rich water goes on and on. Water and Wellness also has quinton, which you've heard me offer and talk about a lot before. One of the most mineral-rich compounds on the face of the planet. You get 10% off of anything, the hydrogen, the quinton, anything from Water and Wellness. Use code Greenfield, okay? Code Greenfield. Go to waterandwellness.com/Greenfield and use code Greenfield. That's waterandwellness.com/Greenfield and use code Greenfield. And finally, this podcast is brought to you by the folks at Seed, who formulate probiotics. Not just probiotics, they formulate the DS01TM, Daily Symbiotic. DS01TM. So it's an evidence-based prebiotic and probiotic formulated for systemic benefits, including digestive health. Think easy poops. But anyways, these bacteria perform critical function, like the production of short-chain fatty acids. The same stuff you'd get if you were to, say, go into ketosis. It feeds your bacteria. The specific way that they've encapsulated these probiotics ensures that they can actually get delivered all the way to your colon, which is unheard of for most probiotic strains, 100% alive and well. And I've interviewed the folks at Seed before. I think it's one of the best formulated probiotics in existence. And it just covers your bases for everything that you would be wanting to look for from a healthy bacteria that you consume. And I mean, it gets rid of gas, bloating, improves stool consistency. You poop like a baby on this stuff. It's Seed, S-E-E-D. You go to seed.com/Ben. You'll get 15% off your first month of their daily symbiotic. That's what's called their symbiotic. Use code Ben15. At seed.com/Ben. That's code Ben15 at SEED.com/Ben. Now you also talk about in the book, and we discussed this just a little bit, about how, you know, if a significant event happens in your life, like even if it's a traumatic event, go back to it, analyze it, talk about it, look what came from it, then go all the way back to the moment when you first felt, let's say, fear or discomfort, adjust your response to it using some of those tactics we talked about. And if you're listening in right now, I really geek out on this when I interview Dr. Don Wood, that whole strategy. So we don't have to repeat that on this interview. And I'll link to that interview if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/realityrevolution, which is where the show notes for this podcast are. But that allows you to reframe past and current circumstances. But then you also talk about, Brian, how when you have a powerful positive moment, like something really good that happens, you anchor it. Like if you hear a really beautiful song that reminds you of a concert with your friends on a perfect day, you'll like scratch your wrist or add a particular word that's special to you, and then you're somehow creating an anchor associated with something positive. When you do that, what do you do with that anchor? Like, how do you use that to control your ability to create an emotional state?
Well, just to back up a step, the anchoring idea comes from neurolinguistic programming, one of the mm-hmm. most fascinating and advanced models for communication and learning that's ever been devised, something I studied majorly in college. And anchoring itself is one of the most powerful ideas. And when you realize all the anchors that you have already set, we're anchored from the moment we're born. TV uses it all the time. Advertising uses anchors. The idea that you have a significant emotional event, and then it's tied to, it can be tied to a single image, feeling, a number, and that the way that the mind works, it simplifies its experience. So you have a whole bunch of stuff, but it's simplified by the color red, or it can be a red cat. And whenever you think of a red cat, you have all that complexity of experience happening. So for some people, they're walking around anchored just on the ocean without a surfboard, getting bobbed around, or in the back of a bus without a driver, right? So you create your own anchors. And when you do this, when you learn that you can create your own anchors, that is one of the keys to changing your reality. For instance, if you create a playlist whenever you are with your wife and you make love to your wife, right? Whenever you hear that playlist again, just driving in your car, you're going to remember those experiences, all that emotion, right? Mm-hmm. You have something powerful that happens. In the moment that it's happening, become aware of it and anchor it for yourself. Take control. And it can be something as simple as scratching your wrist, something that you don't necessarily do. It can be, I twist my thumb, or I say a certain word, or I move my fingers in a certain order. And if I do that again, I can bring up those feelings, and it's incredibly powerful. You're in a very stressful moment. Pull up the anchor of the opposite. Pull up the anchor of that wonderful experience in the past, something beautiful that you saw, an experience with your family, a great moment, whatever it is, anchor those. And if you didn't do it at the time, you can go back, remember it. Pull up all the feelings of it and anchor it again. And if you're in meditation or visualization, anchor those type of things. Once you become aware of the anchors, part of this awareness and the education of anchors is becoming aware of all the negative anchors. Because we got so many negative anchors that pull us into these terrible memories, terrible experiences. People have post-traumatic stress disorder, a lot of different, people that served in the military, they're just loaded with all of these terrible anchors, right? So deconstructing all the negative anchors and creating and constructing positive anchors can be a super game changer. I think it evokes the energy that's similar to that event and experience. So when you use the anchors properly, you move yourself into a field, a quantum field that has energy similar to that wonderful experience. So you wake up and you just do some of these anchors and then add these anchors a part of your routine. Some people, start setting anchors all the time once they become aware of it. It's a powerful hypnotic technique, but anchoring in itself maybe the game changer of all. I don't even talk about it enough in that book.
Yeah.
Tony Robbins uses it. He was probably the first person I really learned about anchors. And since I read that when I was 10 years old, I've been working on anchors, but it gets even more complicated and you can really use it. It's a powerful tool.
Yeah. I remember that from Tony Robbins. Thinking back to a time when you were super powerful or super enabled or incredibly grateful or a very positive experience, boom, you create the anchor and then you make the anchor and then you clap, of course, like Tony Robbins. I can't talk about Tony Robbins without making my clapping joke. But I interviewed a guy named Andy Murphy some time ago, and I'll link to that podcast. And we talked about NLP, and he actually did a live NLP session with me during the podcast. Mm-hmm. And this was back when I was competing in Ironman triathlon. And I remember it was really cool because we created an anchor, and the anchor was me grabbing my thumb. And of course, we created a whole bunch of positive emotions, when I felt very powerful during a workout and some of my best races. And we created a ton of positivity and empowerment around that anchor, grabbing my thumb. And then I realized like halfway through the swim of the Ironman that I did after that, that I was planning on using that tactic for, I'm like, well, shit, I chose the wrong anchor because I can't grab my thumb while I'm swimming. I should have, but it actually worked really well for the run and for the bike. But, caution with the type of anchor that you produce. If you're an athlete, make sure you can still do that anchor while you're doing your sport. And then the other thing is that there's another form that I think is kind of like anchoring that I'm curious if you've ever tried. There's this meditation that my boys and I often do. It's called eco meditation. It's by Dawson Church, who wrote a really good book called The Bliss Brain. And in his meditation, which I actually really like because it's 21 minutes long, but it combines love and gratitude and a six count in, six count out breath pattern, which is really great for parasympathetic activation. And sending positive energy out to the universe, directing positive energy to the areas of your body that need healing. But part of that involves at the beginning of the session, you are tapping over your heart center. And at the end, when you're in that very peaceful state, you're also tapping over your heart center. And I think that tapping can be a wonderful anchor. At least I'm bastardizing it by putting it into that category. But have you ever looked into tapping or using that as an anchor, like getting yourself into a specific state and then tapping a specific body part while you're in that state, you know, such as a very peaceful state post-meditation, that when you're stressed, instead of having to spend 21 minutes to meditate, just tapping that section to bring you back into that state that you were in post-meditation?
Yeah, the Dawson Church is awesome, and he's written a book about tapping. I sort of do some tapping with the exercise routine. I think it's a game changer. It's using the idea of anchors very specifically, and all of the tapping stuff for me has really worked. And when, you know, people I know that have PTSD have been able to change the energies in their body with it. Some of the really good tapping is aware of the different centers in your body and can realign the energy flow. A lot of times you have anxieties. It's because energy is pooling in a certain area and you can't release it. And something about the tapping seems to guide the energy to allow it to flow in your body on top of just the anchor. It's an anchor in itself. But there's something else, I think, even further going on. It's a manipulation of the energy flow in your body as well.
You get into that. You just alluded to your energy routine. So we might as well jump into that because I have a lot of people who love to stretch and do breath work and find out new little moves to do for their morning energy routine. And I was telling you before we started recording that not only did I learn and memorize the routine in your book, but I made a video out of it that hopefully I can link to it from this podcast if I have it out by then. But it's me walking through the whole routine. I added in a few extra little things in addition to what I learned from your book. But part of it is thumping or tapping. Specifically, it is the collarbone and kind of the side of the cheeks and then directly above the spleen. What's the purpose of the tapping? Or I think in the book you actually call it thumping.
I think I got that. I don't want to say the wrong name. There's a woman that has energy exercise, Donna Edwards. I think I might mention her in the book. But she has this seven thumps and using the collarbone. So I started doing that.
Donna Eden.
That's right. Thank you for saving me on that. So if you check out her channel, she has even more, a bunch of really amazing exercises that are related to tapping. She calls them the seven thumps, I believe. And so the one on the collarbone I found in conjunction with those other exercises done at the same time. The goal of that routine is to change the energy flow, to maximize and change the energy flow in your body. And I like to do it before meditation. Some people like to do it afterwards, but it changes. Whenever I do that routine, it doesn't matter if I'm tired or what's going on, it changes the energy in my body and my mind. And that in particular seems to readjust the energy flow, especially in the morning when I do that. It's in my own personal experience and people that I've worked with have really had success. It's really been helpful.
Yeah. And it's almost like self-inflicted cheap acupuncture, right? Because you're stimulating meridian points. These are specific points, the same as a Chinese traditional medicine practitioner might use acupuncture or say acupressure on if you were to go into their office. And there's also a really, really good book I own called Marma Points that gets into this from more of an Ayurvedic standpoint. But it's the same idea. You stimulate certain meridian points by tapping on them or thumping on them. And again, for many people, that seems woo, that you can actually stimulate a point by tapping it. But I mean, simple example, there's the nausea point, right? Right in that soft flesh in between your thumb and your forefinger, that if you're nauseous, if you're, say, car sick, I would challenge anyone, like, get car sick. And, well, don't get car sick, but next time you might get nauseous or car sick or on a boat or whatever, you try that that point, and almost immediately, the nausea goes away. And there's definitely areas of the body through which energy flows, definitely areas of the body where blocks or imbalances in that flow of energy can lead to ill health. And, you know, these specific points that you tap, for some reason, the ones that you list in your book, you know, that the cheek and then the kind of crossing the hands and going over the collarbone, and then the spleen point just above the ribs, like those three seem to work really, really well. And there's kind of like a whole sequence that you go through as far as your morning routine. So you start with the five Tibetan rites. And those, from what I understand, come from a group of, I think they call them lamas or monks in Tibet that would use these each day to maintain some type of longevity. Is that correct?
Right. If you read the original book, it was referred to as the Fountain of Youth. And this guy went searching for the Fountain of Youth and ended up in this lamasery, and where everybody did these routines, even some with some adjustments, and they were all incredibly youthful, very old people. That this guy who came back and wrote about this was shocked at how everybody had improved, or he had seen people that had been sick that started doing this, and it had changed. If you do it on a regular basis, it's supposed to maintain your longevity. What I personally have found in using it is that it moves the energy. I think when we wake up, we, in general, a lot of human beings have a volume of energy that's more near the root or in their gut. You know, just kind of naturally by their posture and what they're doing. And so each of the exercises, if you notice, it sort of kind of moves the energy slowly up the body. So by the end, you're stretching, and it seems to really push it up to the head. I like to also, you know, do a handstand or do something to invert the energy flow in my body at the end. Sometimes that is helpful. Not everybody has the equipment that they can do that, but I'll use gravity boots for the very end of it. But if the reason I found it to be so powerful in my own experience is that it moves the energy up to my head and kind of expands it throughout my body. When I do that on a regular basis, a different kind of energy. We all have different kinds of energy that are moving through it. We have nervous energy. We have the energy that we get when we exercise. And this seems to be a more solid and stable energy that seems to last and kind of be related to the energy centers and the spine in the body, if that makes sense, at least in my own personal experience. So doing those in conjunction with the thumbs and the Zen swing, all of that stuff is especially if you're doing it in the morning, you know, with the sunrise. It's just like you become a conduit, and the energy starts to really give a way of flowing. It's like you're opening up the dam, you're removing, and the river just flows when you do those exercises in conjunction with each other.
Yeah. So it's like spinning, and it's only clockwise with your arms out to the counterclockwise to the left.
You start out doing the spin, and there are studies I also mentioned, just doing the spinning by itself. If you do a spin before you go in for a test, people are much more effective. They have better memory. If you've ever been, you know, and looked at a centrifuge, you can see how the red and white blood cells will separate. There's some sort of separation, and it's an energetic one. You become like sort of an energetic centrifuge where you get that the energy moving. And even in yoga, they talk about the kundalini is not just an energy that's going straight up your body. It's moving in a circular pattern. So you kind of get it going.
Yeah.
Some people argue if they're left-handed that they do that and they get sick. And so some people through slow experimentation have found going counterclockwise, but most people find the clockwise to work. So for me personally, and when I do that, the energy is now flowing. It's moving. And then each of the exercises afterwards sort of pinpoints, it moves up to the sacral, then you're moving it up sort of to the heart and the solar plexus, and then you're moving it up to the throat with each movement. It's also a stretching of the spine, which naturally seems to increase your energy and power.
I really looked into these longevity rites after reading about them in your book. It's funny because briefly they had been mentioned to me by another guy named Stephen Cabral, who I interviewed on my podcast some time ago. We were talking about like Ayurvedic cleansing and things along those lines. And he mentioned the five Tibetan rites. And there's actually not only in your book, but then also I think there's a website, it's like T5T.com that gets deep into these rites as well. But yeah, you have the spinning, and it's kind of interesting because when we look at the heart, you know, it's a tetrahedral shape that causes the blood to vortice as it moves through your body. When you look at water, if you vortice or structure water, you tend to see more crystalline bonding in water. It's like there's a lot of things in nature that respond well to this vorticing effect, and it's almost like you're structuring your own body by doing this counterclockwise spinning when you wake up.
Clockwise. I do clockwise.
Oh, you do clockwise. Yeah. I'm clockwise, right. Yeah. I may have misremembered. You do the leg raise, which is almost like kind of like a seated crunch with your legs extended.
So what happens naturally, your blood's going to flow down to your stomach a little bit when you do that, and it's also the energy. Not just the blood, the energy is kind of moving up a little bit from your perineum, a little bit up to the stomach, the sacral area, just by doing that little exercise, because you've already got it moving. And then the second one, you're starting to move it, getting it to pull a little bit upward, moving it from the perineum up into the stomach.
And then you got the back bend and the tabletop, and then the upward downward dog, which people might already know from yoga. And when I dug into it, there's even like mantras that are associated with each of the positions, like spinning, you say I'm full of energy, and for the leg raise, my mind is clear and calm. And for the water, it's like I'm flexible and receptive. Then for the tabletop, which is like earth, I'm strong and balanced. Then the upward downward dog, I think it's you're positive and motivated. But even if you don't do the entire routine, you just do those five exercises, they take like 5 minutes, you know, you 10 to 21 reps, and it works super well. There's actually, I don't know if you read the book, but there's a sixth rite. It's the Uddiyana.
There is a sixth rite.
Uddiyana Bandha, the yoga breathwork exercise where you're like locking, like sucking in the abdominal wall at the end of an exhalation. Right. And I read about this in the book. It actually kind of like draws energy out of the pelvis. And it's something some of these monks would use to maintain their ease of celibacy. So you may not want to do this before like a hot date night because you don't want to move the energy out of that section necessarily, but that there is a sixth one as well, which is super interesting. Right. And I find it's actually quite efficacious for stimulating a bowel movement as well. When you're kind of like bent over doing that airlock, that Uddiyana Bandha, and I'll hunt down videos to these, or if my video is done, I'll link to it when it comes out in the show notes. But anyway, so then you go from that to the side to side twisting, I think, where you're twisting and just slapping.
Kind of just, you know, and if your shoulder's okay, just kind of slapping your stomach area, just kind of a slow, you know, washing machine type of rotation where you go back and forth, and you start to hit your kidneys and your stomach a little bit, kind of just the contact will energize them.
That's another one I like to do just when I'm taking a break from work. But yeah, twisting side to side, slapping up and down your torso as you go.
That movement physically, you're acknowledging with your fingertips that the energy moving up your legs, down up your chest, kind of pounding on your chest, the whole process. If you've done it for a while, you start to notice that you're awakening the energy that's there. It starts to flow.
And then you do the loose fists on the back, which feels really good, kind of stimulates the adrenal glands, almost like a low back massage with your fists. And then you like tap all up and down your legs, do a chest pump like a gorilla. That was my kid's favorite part, like a Tarzan-esque pounding on your chest. And that seems to get a lot of blood flow going. And then you have the tiger bend and lift, where you're grabbing the energy from the earth and pulling it up towards your heart and reaching for the sky. Then the Zen swings. Then it kind of finishes with the thumps. You know, the only other things I threw in there, Brian, was for I found this one to be really useful for activating almost like the left and right hemispheric activity of the brain for a morning stretch routine in a standing position, like touching right elbow to left knee. Almost like you're standing and kind of crunching down right elbow, left knee, and then stand up and then left elbow, right knee. So I'll throw in like 10 to 20 repetitions of that. And then the other one that I like to throw at the very end is the Tai Chi, you know, shaking, almost like you're on a mini trampoline, but you're just shaking your body up and down for about, you know, anywhere from 1 to 3 minutes. And so I toss those two in there, and man, it's such a great routine.
Watch before a basketball game. You see the basketball players, that's what they're doing, is they're just shaking it out. There's something that happens when you do that process of shaking the body. It releases the negative energy.
That's like a trauma release. Yeah. Like, you know, zebras and gazelles do that after they've been chased by a lion. They do that full body tremor or shaking. Human beings are one of the few animals who, after we go through stress, don't shake it off.
Right. That's why I recommend a vibration machine. Just, you know, if you can integrate that into your routine, just stand on a vibration machine for a minute. And it kind of does the same thing. You know, sometimes you can extend it out, but I think everybody needs to get up and do that, just even for 30 seconds, because we're holding energy from the day before or when we go to bed from the day. And if you just do that, you kind of do that. My sister, who's super successful, that does an energy routine every day, that's her big thing, just to make sure to do that, to release the energy that you've brought into your body. And it naturally keeps the energy that's good, but it seems to get rid of that negative energy that's not useful to you, kind of sheds it when you do that.
Yeah. It's such a great routine. So I'll hunt down as many resources as I can. I'll link them in the show notes at bengreenfieldfitness.com/realityrevolution. And again, like I mentioned, I shot a video of this whole routine, so I'll hopefully have it ready by then.
The table is the one that I have, because I have a bad shoulder I need to get surgery on. And, mm-hmm. and it even mentions in the book, if you struggle with the tabletop, you can rest your shoulders or back on a bench or bed and just extend upward. You still get most 90% of the benefit without holding your hands on the floor. Some people, some older people that I've given this routine to, they struggle with that in particular. The tabletop seems to be the hardest portion of the five Tibetans, because some people's, are just not as stretched and limber. You can eventually do it over time. And if you struggle with any of those, there are modifications that you can do, which basically get close to the impact of the regular exercise.
Cool. So yeah, there's definite modifications that you can make. You know, one other thing I wanted to ask you, or at least I definitely wanted to make sure that we get into this, is this idea that you kind of like set intentions for a lot of the things that you do, whether it's like an intention to brush your teeth or an intention to wash the dishes, and you somehow tie that into those creation of intentions for activities that you might do to your normal daily routine. And this might be kind of a packed question, but I'm going to ask it anyways and see if you can decipher it for people. What does that have to do with your reticular activating system? Like, how are you training your reticular activating system by setting intentions for tons of stuff that you do during the day?
So the reticular activating system, the best thing I recommend is to understand it like it's a software program. You have this thing, this amazing thing in your mind that when you look for stuff, it will find it. We all know the experience. You're shopping for a new car, and so you want a Dodge truck, and then you're driving and all you see are the Dodge trucks. When in reality, mm-hmm. they're already there all the time. But there is a portion of the mind that's really, really good at, it will identify the things that you're looking for. So you can use this. It's not magical. It's a mistake a lot of people make when they first start to learn about the law of attraction. Hey, I want to attract a girl in a black dress. Well, they're just turning on a portion of their brain that finds that girl with the black dress. They did not create her or manifest her out of the blue, and suddenly that girl with the black dress shows up. Your attention and awareness became identified with that, and you will find. So if you become aware of this aspect of your awareness, you can use it to a huge benefit. Once you program your reticular activating device, it will find. It will always find. If it's an answer to a problem, it will find it. And so when you know what you're doing, when you turn on the reticular activating device, you start looking for the solutions. Your mind is an amazing device. That's a little portion that we're not aware of. It filters in the information. It's evolved over millions of years, and we just ignore it. It doesn't get used properly, or we don't understand it. So once you understand the reticular activating device, when you create an intention, I want to buy a new Lincoln Navigator, right? Then you're going to start seeing advertisements for the Lincoln Navigator. You're going to start seeing them around. You're just becoming aware of it. Next thing you know, you got a cheap deal on a Lincoln Navigator. You never would have been able to bought it before. It's not just in buying cars, but in doing anything. If it's a new business, new project that you want, when you create an intention, you're moving the reticular activating system in your mind towards that thing that you want to identify, and you'll start to filter out the stuff that's not important, and you'll start to see the things that are important, which is a way, because there's so much information that we have bringing in all the time. And so it's an amazing thing that our brain can identify. And so you use this aspect. It's kind of a portion of your subconscious mind that's doing some of the work that you're not doing, and you can use it, and it brings to the consciousness the information you need that's related to your intention.
Okay, that makes sense. So what you're saying is, let's say there's an activity I do on a daily basis, like brushing my teeth, right? But I also want to get a Lincoln Navigator. And so what you're saying, or maybe that new Hyundai Genesis, I think it's called, that thing's supposed to be a pretty sick new electric SUV. So anyways, what I would do is set an intention. Every time I go brush my teeth, even though I would normally just go brush my teeth, it's not like it's a hard task to do, I would literally say, I am going to go brush my teeth now. I have an intention to go brush my teeth. And what I'm doing by doing that is actually training my reticular activating system almost with training wheels on to get really good at setting an intention for the easy stuff that I'm doing every day. And so when I'm setting an intention for brushing my teeth and for making coffee and for reading my Bible and for walking into my office, I'm going to walk into my office now. Look at me. Hooray. 1-2 step. But then once I say, okay, I'm setting an intention that I'm going to go deadlift, double my body weight and do like a 350-pound deadlift, then what I'm doing then is basically getting my reticular activating system to the point where it's noticing every last little thing that I could do, whether mobility or strength or grip training or buying a new hex bar to go along with my barbell training that I normally wouldn't have noticed or wouldn't have been aware of, again, back to the concept of luckiness, that move me way closer to being able to accomplish that more hefty goal that's obviously a little bigger than, say, brushing my teeth, but my reticular activating system is just ready and raring for that bigger activity because I've trained it to have intention in the smaller ones.
When you do the small things, it gets you in used to the we're not used to setting an intention before we do something. Go through a day and every single thing that you do, try to set the intention for it. It's hard. Hey, I'm going to get up and go to the bathroom right now. I'm going to go back into my office. I'm going to sit and read this book. So when you first try that, you're going to probably do it for about 20 minutes. Yeah. How long can you actually do that? And when you do that, then suddenly you start to realize, first of all, how it works, how your mind works when you do it. And then when you start applying it to bigger and bigger things, that it's open, it's active, and you're interacting with the reticular activating device in a much more effective way. And you are the creator. If you've ever painted or created anything, the little details are just as important. You know, when I'm painting, it's all the little tiny stuff. And when I realize that, you're painting your reality. So you want to make the little things important. When you do, they're not always going to be important, but the mind will work in that way. And it will find intentions and guide you towards things much more. When some people, when they work on their reticular activating system, they're not used to it. It's just like a muscle. If you sit and don't work that muscle, it's not going to be as effective as if you've worked it in the past.
That makes total sense. And I love how we just weave that into our daily routine because, you know, stuff we're going to be doing anyway. So that was a really cool part of your book as well. And then in your book, you actually have a lot of resources that are kind of written as footnotes throughout the book. And I noticed as I'm going through it, I'm like, oh, he's got like all these hyperlinks on here to different like meditations and soundtracks that train you to do what he's talking about in the book. And you have like this whole podcast channel with all these downloadable meditations. Like I actually have a few of them on my phone. Let me pull it up. So I've got your gratitude meditation. I've got your deep sleep meditation. I have your void meditation and discovered all those through your book. Are you still recording meditations on your podcast feed, which I think is Reality Revolution?
Every Saturday. I have a new episode on the podcast every day. But every Saturday we have a new meditation. There's 150 meditations that are available right now. And there's a variety of sleep meditations, different meditations on every aspect on, we've taken the quantum jumping idea to quantum surfing. There's ways to travel into different dimensions. There's simple stuff, just the thank you meditation and I am meditation. I've tried to cover everything and it's a community thing. People join me at usually 2 o'clock every Saturday and we meditate together. And I think there's something powerful that happens when people, even though those meditations are available at all times, there's something powerful that happens when we're meditating together over this stuff. So it's sort of a community thing I look forward to every Saturday where we kind of get together and we meditate on different subjects. So last week it was a sleep meditation for falling asleep to the wealth fulfilled. And I'm always trying to do different things and with the meditations. And meditation is sort of like a piece of art too. I'm still learning, even though I've done 150 of them, I'm still learning how to do different kinds. I use different breathing techniques and exercises. And I'm one of those people that gets super bored very quickly. I don't like doing the same meditation all the time, even though I have. I like to change it up. So a lot of what you're seeing in my meditations is just me creating another meditation for myself to play around with. I have this deep part of me that wants to keep going and exploring different things. So that's what I'm trying to do with that, is just change it up. My goal with meditation is not to give you the perfect meditation. It's just to make it fun. Now, the biggest thing I find with a lot of people is that they look at meditation as a chore or an exercise, like they have to do, is they add a part as their exercise routine. Okay, I'm going to go lift, then I'm going to go do some cardio, and then I'm going to meditate. And when you think of it like that, it eventually you get bored with it or you stop doing it. And all I want to do is just, you know, make it fun. So you look forward to it like watching a cool television show or having fun. You know, that's what I'm trying to do with those meditations. And maybe you'll find some other meditation later, but if you, in your mind, can flip the switch and just look at meditation as something fun that you can do, then I've accomplished my goal. That's what I'm really trying to do.
Yeah, that's such a good point, too, about group meditation and almost like the collective consciousness and that synergy that arises. Like, there's that one story, I think I heard Deepak Chopra talking about this, about how they had an experiment conducted during the Lebanon War in the 80s that showed that when something like 1,000 people in Jerusalem were meditating on world peace, that war deaths in Lebanon went down by like 75% just during that group meditation. And, you know, and anybody who's walked into a room with a whole bunch of people meditation, like, you pick up on it right away. Just that powerful energy, even if they're not in the same room as you, just from a quantum physics standpoint, same as we talked about with time, same thing can apply to space, and just the protonic ripple of two people meditating together, even if they're far apart, or group meditating together, there's something that's really interesting about it that goes above and beyond just the fact that you've got accountability, bro, with my meditation partner. Like, there's actually more that happens.
I'm exploring in my next book this idea even further, and I do believe that the next level of consciousness, you know, the cat is one below us, then the human. What's after the humans? What sort of consciousness looks at humans like cats, right? I think the next level is a group consciousness that we will have access to, that we will, you know, and I've already seen it. And the more we do it, people are becoming aware of this group consciousness, which I think is happening on the earth. And I can make the argument that it's happening. There's a shift in consciousness. We can't study prescription medicine anymore because the placebo is so powerful. But beyond that, people are starting to have very profound group meditation experiences, becoming aware of others' thoughts and feelings. A sort of social memory complex is forming, like the Jungian group collective consciousness. I think that's going to become alive. It's becoming alive as we're doing it. We're part of this process. We're awakening a group mind, not in a like a Borg type of way, but it's just a part of our consciousness. We have knowledge that is outside of our own experience that we're tapping into. And slowly, I think we're awakening that. And I want to explore that even further. I think that it's a game changer, that it can change the planet, that it can change the world if we tap into this group consciousness that is a real thing. And I have a peace meditation, you know, the same point that you made. You know, and if you the week when I did that sleep meditate, that peace meditation, everything got better. There was like no conflicts. I was like watching the news, you can see, and to feel like that meditation had an effect. Let's take it to the next level. Can you imagine if 1 million people, if everybody on the planet just decided to meditate for 2 minutes? Just take a break for 2 minutes. Everybody close your eyes and think on peace. Could you imagine what would happen?
Yeah.
It may not happen in my lifetime, but someday something like that is going to happen. There's going to be a collective shift, and it's going to be a game changer, and I'm really excited for it. And I think it's going to happen in my lifetime, where a group consciousness that we become aware of starts to influence our behaviors and our daily activities and things like that. In my mind, I see that is sort of the next step.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, a lot of people think that, you know, in December of 2020, we started as Saturn and Jupiter aligned into the age of Aquarius. Right. And part of that is the expansion of consciousness and some kind of collective consciousness. And it is interesting because a lot of people's dream cycles changed honestly, my life got better, you know, and I think that people who are honestly following a lot of the rules that you're following or teaching in the book about positivity, about reprogramming the reticular activating system, and about subconscious reprogramming. And I mean, so many things we didn't even talk about, but that I think people do need to get the book to read, like lucid dreaming and visualization. Like, it just all really, really helps move that along. And for me, it was a really, really great book. 'Cause you know, I'm kind of a unicorn in that, you know, I'm Christian. I read my Bible. I pray every day. I believe in God. I believe in creation. And yet at the same time, I think like God made us these really cool magical creatures who can do things like, you know, reprogram our subconscious and engage in, you know, with the quantum universe and lucid dream. And I just, sometimes I think it's sad that some people like disconnect a lot of this because, you know, it doesn't align with Christianity or something like that. Whereas I think all it does is enhance your spiritual journey. And the book is just, it's really fantastic. I know we're just about out of time. But for those of you listening in, I've been taking notes, and I'll link to everything that we talked about, like Brian's podcast and, you know, the exercise routine that we talked about and his book, Reality Revolution. The subtitle is The Mind-Blowing Movement to Hack Your Reality. I'm going to link to all that at bengreenfieldfitness.com/reality revolution, because I think you guys would really enjoy Brian's work and what he does. So Brian, it's actually really, it's really cool to meet you after reading your book.
Thank you, man.
And really cool to get to, you know, this is my, you know, fun part of my job is I get to read great books and then get the people who wrote them on and just talk with them about all the cool stuff in the book. So thanks for doing what you're doing, man.
It's been fun. We'll have to do it again.
Awesome. All right, folks. Well, I'm Ben Greenfield along with author Brian Scott, signing out from BenGreenfieldFitness.com. Again, show notes are at BenGreenfieldFitness.com/reality revolution. Have an amazing week. Well, thanks for listening to today's show. You can grab all the show notes, the resources, pretty much everything that I mentioned over at BenGreenfieldFitness.com, along with plenty of other goodies from me, including the highly helpful Ben Recommends page, which is a list of pretty much everything that I've ever recommended for hormones, sleep, digestion, fat loss, performance, and plenty more. Please also know that all the links, all the promo codes that I mentioned during this and every episode help to make this podcast happen and to generate income that enables me to keep bringing you this content every single week. So when you listen in, be sure to use the links in the show notes, use the promo codes that I generate, because that helps to float this thing and keep it coming to you each and every week.